So I've been sprucing up the podcast studio lately and have added some killer new decor. You've probably recognized some of this artist's work if you're in the outdoor space at all. Ryan Kirby's classic white-tailed deer prints, they've got this awesome vintage vibe that just works whether you're at home, your office, or even at hunt camp. One of my favorites is the growth and maturity of the white-tailed buck print. It captures the life cycle of the white-tailed buck as he matures from year to year. Not only does it look great, but it's also packed with info to help you age deer on the hoof. One cool thing about these prints is they've been approved by the National Deer Association, so you know that the info is spot on. Ryan Kirby's work is top-notch. I know you know the magazine Field & Stream. When they decided to go back to print, they reached out to Ryan to do the cover art of their first two issues back to print. Go check out his stuff at ryankirby.com, and my listeners can get a 10% discount by using the code CHECKOUT10 at checkout. Welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. This ministry exists to provide coaching, resources, and events for pastors and church members. My name is Jared Sparks. Join me as I talk pastoral ministry, applied theology like manhood and womanhood, political theology, and cultural analysis with a little bit of hunting and fishing thrown in. I'm a husband, a father, and a pastor, and I'm here to remind you of the chief pastor and our King, Jesus. Hello and welcome back to the show. Hope you guys are having a great day today. I have been out doing some storm chasing after the big storm last week. I've been on some roofs inspecting. And if you didn't know, I started roofing again, and I'm doing that just one day a week. If you need a roof or roof inspection, give me a call. We'd love to come check it out and see if there's been any hail damage. Our neighborhood got absolutely annihilated with hail. So I have been on roof after roof checking it out. So reach out to Borum Roof Company or just text me or call me if you need some help there. Other than that, I hope you guys are doing well. A couple reminders before I introduce my guest today. Just want to remind you about the Sons and Slaves podcast. I'm talking to my boys about raising sons into men, and we're having a great time going through the book, Boyhood and Beyond. We've almost completed that book. We'll be done with that very soon and moving on to other things. So you want to check out that show if you can. And then also just want to remind you of the Fruitful and Fearless podcast with Jordan and some of the ladies at the church. So please check those things out. If you haven't yet, pass that word along if you would. All right. I am having an interesting conversation today, one I've wanted to have for a little while. You know me at this point, and I've been talking about hunting and fishing for several years now. I get to talk to Dr. Tom Askell about being in the woods, being on hunts, and specifically want to hear about a bear hunt that he had last year. So I have with me today Dr. Tom Askell. Tom, how you doing, brother?
Hey, great, Jared. Thanks so much. Sorry it's taken so long for us to connect on this.
I'm glad to get to do this. A little bit different. I'm sure you're doing shows and podcasts all the time about a bunch of different things. And I know you got a lot of things that's been happening with G3 lately and all the pressure and stuff that I'm sure comes your way of asking questions about that. So we're just going to have some fun and we're going to talk about hunting. So let's go ahead and pray and ask for the Lord's help. And then we'll get into our conversation. Father, just thank you for this time. I thank you for Dr. Askell and your work in his life that has affected so many. And I just ask that this conversation be fun. Pray it'd be just a good time. Two guys talking about being in the woods, being on hunts. And God, I thank you for the opportunities that you've given him over the years and the opportunities that I've had as well. And just to harvest and have a great time being out in the woods, providing for a family and just having fun being on a hunt. And just the next few minutes that we have to talk together, I just pray for blessing and that you would just guide our discussion. Trust you will. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
All right. Hey, before we get into that, would you just give us an update? Last year, I reached out to you and it was right before, I think, Hurricane Helene. We were just trying to figure out which one it was. I guess you guys just get wave after wave of storms down there. But how's the church and in the area down there recovering after, I don't know, 6 months or so or 8 months or so after the hurricane came through?
Yeah. Well, what made that somewhat difficult was 2 years ago, almost two and a half now, Hurricane Ian came through and our church got hit pretty hard. We were a direct hit here. And so a lot of people lost their homes and flooded out. And so when Helene came through, there was still many people who are not finished with Hurricane Ian, including the church where I served. We were still in negotiation with insurance and it's been a nightmare in my own home. We had not finished with negotiations on that. And then right after Helene, or I think maybe, yes, right after Helene, another storm came through. There was two within 2 weeks. And so like one of our elders who got wiped out, and Ian had just been, he just got back into his house probably 2 months prior
Okay.
and got flooded. And so,
Oh.
man, there's a crews got out there. They gutted it, got everything ready to go, and then got flooded again.
Oh
And
no.
so, yeah, he's still out. It's, it's just dispiriting to go through that three times in 2.5 years or so, or 2 years. And so things are back pretty well to normal here. The infrastructure's good, and the people who, have had damage are still working through that. And the laws changed in Florida
Okay.
before this last year's hurricane season, which made it a little bit more difficult for filing claims. The insurance companies got some benefits out of those deals. But anyway, we're doing fine. The church is good. We just got our last air conditioning unit, I think, was replaced about a month ago or so. And that's the one that is where my study is. And so I'm very grateful for that, to kind of get that before the summer comes.
Very cool. Very
Yeah.
cool. Well, there's a lot happening down there, from storms and recovery and all that. And then a new thing that I think was maybe announced 3 or 4 months ago, but Dr. Bauckham's coming down there. So is he
That's
on
right.
site yet, or is
Yeah,
he?
he's here.
Okay.
And
Very
yeah,
cool.
he's here. It's great. It's a wonderful story. I won't give you all the details, but the long and short of it is, for years, Vody and I have been friends. We started together the Institute of Public Theology 4 years ago to train pastors, train men, and God bless that effort. And out of that has grown now this new development that I certainly didn't see coming, but we are getting ready to launch Founders Seminary in August of this year. And IOPT, the Institute of Public Theology, will become a 4-year Bible college, a Reformed Baptist Bible college. To my knowledge, it's maybe the only one. I don't know of any others that exist as a Bible college, but that college will be given to three majors. One is classical Christian education, the other is business, and then the third, of course, is public theology. And the Founders Seminary, which Bodie's now on site to help with practically, and being here to be residential faculty, that seminary will be given to teaching MDiv in a more rigorous format than many. I can safely say most MDiv curricula today.
Okay.
And it will be exclusively for elder qualified church commended men. And so we're not trying to, just make it Bible study for anybody that wants to come. It's
Right.
you're going to have to be commended by a church, and you're going to have elder qualifications. So some hope and future prospect of serving in gospel ministry. And I'm deeply excited about that. We've already got 20 students that we've accepted. It's residential, and it's probably going to take 4 years, 101 credit hours. It's going to be rigorous. And our goal is to train men with sharp minds, warm hearts, and steel spines.
Love it.
We want guys that won't bend. And so Vody is here trying to get settled. He's been a nomad with his family since December 1st, and he's been homeless, but he's hoping to be able to move into a permanent residence maybe by the end of the summer.
Good. Good deal. Well, I'm excited to hear all those developments. Our church has been supporting the work down there for a couple years now, I believe.
I'm grateful.
But we've had our eyes and attention down there and are excited about what God's doing. And I mean, we're all rooting for you and keeping up the good
thank
work.
You.
And it's just awesome to see. Desperately
yeah, thank
needed.
you.
Yes.
Amen.
Okay. Well, if you can't, well, you're not watching on video. So what you can't see is what I can see right now. And if this does go up on YouTube, you'll be able to see it. But I'm seeing, it looks like we got an alligator above you, maybe a croc. I can't tell the difference, but
that's an
with the
alligator.
nose.
Yeah.
And then you got a bear to your right there. And then I can't see in your above your left shoulder there is like an antelope or something. I can't
it's
tell
a pronghorn.
everything.
Yeah,
Okay,
it's a
it's a
pronghorn.
pronghorn.
Yeah.
Awesome. So clearly you're a hunter. I'd love to hear the story of, I saw a picture floating around of you with your bear on a successful bear hunt last year. And I thought, well, I'd like to talk to him about that, but let's back up a little bit. Let's just talk about when you grew up and did you grow up in the woods hunting? Who taught you about hunting, and how did you become, a guy that's now been doing it for a long time and still loving it? So how did hunting become a part of your life?
Well, it actually happened through the church. I grew up in a Southern Baptist church, Beaumont, Texas, South Park Baptist. And we had what, I don't know if they still have them today, but the Royal Ambassadors program for boys. And so our RA group would meet every week. And then nobody in my family really hunted, but there were some men in the church that did. And one of them had a deer lease. So every year he would take a group of RAs that had earned the right to go out into the woods to deer hunt. And so those men taught me how to hunt. And I grew up probably from about 8, 9, 10 years old till I was 18 hunting, never killed anything. And in fact, when I was 16, I think it was, I went down to the Army surplus store and I bought a Swiss carbine for $15. It was, you know, cobbled together, 7.5 millimeter. I mean, it was a good, it is a good rifle, still is, but open sights. And just, that was the gun that I hunted with as my own gun. And the last time I hunted as a kid was, I was in my senior year of high school. A friend of mine had his grandfather had some land. So he invited me out over the Thanksgiving break, and he had just gotten a brand new 30-06, and he'd always hunted with a 30-30, and that 30-30 had a nice scope on it. I'd never hunted with a scope. And so he said, man, why don't you try out my 30-30? So I did. And the first morning I'm sitting in the blind, they dropped me off, I'm sitting in this blind, and at 7:15, this 8-point buck walks within 20, 25 yards of me.
Oh man.
And I'm thinking, this is my day. So, man, I pull up that 30-30 and I look through that scope, and that buck's eyes were this big as saucers. And I'm looking at it, and I got buck fever.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Could not pull the trigger. So I sat there and watched him play for about 15 minutes, and then a couple of doe and fawns came out. And so we get back to camp that morning, and everybody's telling their stories, and I'm kind of quiet. And they finally said, well, Tom, did you see anything? And I said, yeah, I saw one. And so, What was that? So it was 8-point.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, how far away was that? So it was about 20 yards. I said, what, were trees in the way? What's the deal? I said, no, it was an open shot. And, why didn't you shoot it? I said, I couldn't pull the trigger. So I became the laughing stock of the camp, you know,
oh,
the rest
there you
of
go.
The time there. And that was my last hunting experience until 2012.
Oh, really?
We planted a church here. I'd had opportunities, had some friends, pastors out in New Mexico that offered to take me, you know, moose hunting. They were guides. And
okay.
I just never thought I had the time, and I didn't ever do it. And I look back and have some regret over that, but you know, I had mm-hmm. small kids at the time too. So
right.
maybe that was the wise choice. But anyway, in 2012, I had a friend who is an elder at a church we planted about 30 miles from here. And his business had a couple of leases on King Ranch in Texas, South Texas, kind of a storied ranch. I grew up in Texas and I'd always heard about it, never thought I'd set foot on it. And he invited me and a couple other pastors to go out there, and we went deer hunting and shot some cold bucks, you know, toward the end of the season. And it was, man, it was like fever, you know, got
right.
all over
yeah.
me. And since then, I've been trying to make up for lost times.
There
I
you
go.
Go.
Whenever I can. And it's the most relaxing thing I do.
Yeah.
When I get in the woods, it's like my blood pressure drops almost instantly. And so I've enjoyed, by God's grace, I mean, more hunts than I could have ever imagined over the last 10 to 13 years or so. God's blessed me wonderfully well with friends who've invited me and provided opportunities for me to hunt.
Man, that's so cool. There's something. Yeah. I didn't start hunting until I was 35. Similar story. I went in the woods a lot when I was a kid. My grandpa had a farm. I asked my dad to go deer hunting one time, and he took us hunting, and he had no idea what to do. So we were like walking around the woods, you know,
we
jumped one little deer and never got one. And then we had a guy at our church that said, hey, Jared, why don't you go ahead? And he was probably 65 at the time. And he said, you can hunt on my property, use my gun, just go to hunter safety course. So I did all that. And it was from when I was sitting for 45 minutes. So my first five times in a stand, I killed three deer.
Wow.
So yeah, I know.
That's wild.
And then for like the next 3 years, I thought that's just what it was like. You know, I was like, honey, I'm gone. I'll be back in an hour and a half, you know, and it realized really quickly, it's not like that. And but it was just like something there that just, it hooked me. And I can't explain it because it's not like it's a moral imperative, get out and hunt. I mean, it's part of provision, but it's also something where I want to nudge guys. It's also not necessarily something I definitely want to encourage people to do it. You know, there's something deeply valuable for men to be in places like that hunting affords you to be.
Yeah.
And then enjoy prayer, beauty, provision, all the things that come with it. So for you then, 2012, how old are you in 2012 then?
2012. Good night.
Season backwards math.
55. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
55. So I was 35. You're 55.
Yeah,
when you got back into
it.
So since then, you know, you got, you know, quite a few years now since then. some memorable hunts then. So you got this bear this last year. Is it all with a gun? You're doing any with a bow, any crossbow hunting or anything like that?
Yeah, I got a friend who taught me how to shoot a crossbow probably 6 years ago. And then he's from Wyoming and he's killed everything with a bow. In fact, you know, he and his friends laugh at people that use guns, you know, they think that's cheating. And then they laugh at people out, as they call it, out east who hunt with a bow because they, you know, you never shoot more than 30, 40 yards. And they say, well, that's, you know, that's nothing. Mm-hmm. And so, he taught me how to shoot. And then he set up a hunt for me to go pronghorn hunting, which, you know, you had to be competent at 80 to 90 yards. And I didn't even have my pin set for 80 to 90 yards. And so there's a young guy who was a bull rider that he taught to hunt, who was really a great athlete. In fact, he's the one that took us, and it was kind of right near where he lived, the section we got drawn for. And this guy had 3D targets set up in his backyard. And when we got there in the afternoon, my street is 4 feet above sea level. Okay. And so we're like at, I don't know, maybe 5,000-6,000 feet, you know, so I'm trying to find an oxygen molecule in addition to everything else. And I'm out of shape. And this guy's whipping out arrows from his hip and stringing them and shooting these different, one was set at 70, one at 80, one at 95, if I remember right. And he's doing heart shots with everyone. Wow. And I'm losing arrows, you know, trying to hit a target. So
probably embarrassed too. Like, what am I doing?
Horrible. Yeah. So he'd already found a couple of big pronghorns. He said, let's go. So we jumped over the fence and started up this field behind his house. And it's spot and stalk. And so it's a lot of hills, a lot of valleys, a lot of gullies. And so you're spotting them, you know, maybe 600-700 yards away. And then you stalk up on them, but you run the low by portions, and then you quietly kind of go up the hills. And man, I'm dying. And I looked this guy up after we got home at night, and he was like the Gatorade athlete of the year in high school, you know, and he's probably 30 years old, and I'm dying. So anyway, they took it easy on me after that first day. They realized they had to kind of change the strategy of the hunt, because there was no pronghorn in any danger of dying from an arrow from Tom Astle. I can tell you that. I flung a couple of them, and there was one at the end of the first day, or in the second day, I think, when we had been running, man, and I'm dying. And so this young guy's, we were tracking a big one, and he goes over a hill. And so JC goes up the hill, and he looks over it, and he starts waving at me. He says, come on, man, he's only 40 yards. You know, 40 yards, probably even you can hit that. And and so I couldn't make it up the hill. I got halfway up, and I said, I can't take another step, you know. And so anyway, I didn't get one. But in the providence of God, we had a pretty good hurricane that year later. And because of that, I was in Colorado and wasn't able to get home the way I was supposed to. Mm-hmm. And the tag was still good for gun season.
Oh,
so I had two extra days. I'm in Colorado. So I called my buddy and said, hey, man, I got this tag. Any way that we could possibly take a day or two and just hunt with a gun? And they took me out. And that's where I got the pronghorn.
Nice.
And it was a nice shot. I mean, for me, it was about a 320-yard shot.
That's great.
And I didn't feel guilty at all for shooting it with a gun, long gun, even though they kind of laughed at me. But I said, you laugh all you want to.
That's a successful hunt. That's great.
That's right. So I shot a pig with a bow, but that's the only thing. And I didn't get to harvest him. I couldn't track him. It got late, and I didn't have any light.
Pigs are tough.
Yeah.
We went down, we took a men's trip. It was like the best church trip ever. We took 14 guys from the church and went down to Texas, and we went hog hunting. We went through I forget what it was called. It was a department, or it was a army something property north of, near Tyler, Texas, I think.
Okay.
Army Corps of Engineer property. There's a massive lake there. We went walking. I mean, we walked 15, 20 miles over a couple days and ended up walking up on a couple of them. Those things are tough. I mean, I was round after round into these things. I felt so bad as to die already, you know?
Yeah.
So you got the gator ahead of you right here. So you told me beforehand you wrestled that to the, you know, it was like attacking a grandmother, and you
that's
jumped
right
on us, wrestled us, choked
that
to death.
Lady. Yeah. You know, of course, we got gators all over the place around here. And when I moved into the house we live in 20-something years ago, there's a pond on the acre next to us, and there was a 10-foot gator in it. And I had a little, you know, dead kids, young kids. And so I called the Florida Wildlife Commission. I said, "Hey, man, I've got an alligator in my pond." And the guy said, "So, well, has he threatened anybody?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, do you have any pets that are in danger?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, sir, this is Florida. We do have alligators. They live here." And I said, "Well, I know that. I got one in my pond. I'm trying to get rid of, and they just told me to live with it." So he walked off one day. But so they're everywhere. And again, I got an opportunity to go hunt with a couple of that. There is a hunting season now. There hadn't since I've been here. That's opened up. But a couple of our guys in church have gone. So three or four guys go out. They draw tags every year. But I tried for 5 years and never got a permit for a gator. But there are trappers and those that get tags for nuisance gators. And so one of those guys took me on a hunt through some orange groves, and we were hunting in canals mostly. And we found this one. It's the only time I've ever been gator hunting. And he turned out to be a 12-foot gator. Got
Oh
him with a
man.
9mm.
No
And
way.
the guy's dad, who's hunted alligators all his life, didn't believe him. He's working at a sugar factory. And so this guy called his dad. Because when we got him, he said, "I think he's probably 11 feet, 10, 11 feet." We measured him; he's 12 feet.
Wow.
So he called his dad. His dad didn't believe him. He said, "Bring him by here." So we took him by the factory. All these guys come out, and this big old gator's in the back of this truck, and he's still moving around, nervous system still kicking. And so they looked at it, and his dad looked at me, and he said, "Son," said, I don't know what else you do." Said, "But you better move on to another species, because you'll never get one like this again." So that's the only alligator I've ever hunted, and
Yeah,
so I
one
was
and
glad to
done.
get him. Yeah, that's right. That's
There you
right.
go. Go out on top. We've got a culture now because I started hunting. I talk about it all the time. Got buddies in the church, and there's a lot of us that hunt at this point. And our boys now are having, they're competitive. I've got a 10-year-old, we have four kids, got three boys, and all the boys are really super competitive about hunting now. And my son is 10. And he's gone out with me the last 2 years, but hasn't got one yet. So of course he's just, hanging his head in shame, and as all his buddies are getting, deer. But we had a guy, young guy, his name was Asa, and Asa is a 12-year-old, and he shot two lifetime bucks this year, with a cross, one with a gun, one with a crossbow, but it scored 176 and an eighth, and it was massive, and it was a non-typical deer that was an older gentleman in our church that mentors him, brought him out there. And we've been telling Asa, "Now, buddy, you got to know that this is probably the best year of hunting you'll have in your entire life. You got to understand this." That, and so, but he's, needless to say, he's hooked for life.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, it's fun stuff. It's so fun. All right, well, let's hear. So, I got to go on a bear hunt. I got a bear a couple years ago. It was just a little one though. It was like 175 pounds. I got the rug right here, and I got to eat it. And I don't know if you ate yours or not, but we loved bear. And so, what's the story, man? How'd you get to go on a bear hunt, and what was that about?
Well, yeah, Rob Scott is an old friend. He was one of the not first, maybe the second or third intern I ever had here at the church, and he's been pastoring out in Alaska now for about 20 years. And Rob's just made for Alaska, man. I mean, I can't imagine a guy better suited for that. He's an outdoorsman. He can fix anything. He's like MacGyver, and so he lives in this little village, Dillingham. It's a fishing village, and he's killed. He can't even count the number of bears, I bet, that he's killed and guided other folks to kill. He's killed everything. And so when I got back into hunting, he kind of we had commonality there that we started talking about. And he was talking about me coming out and hunting sometime, and I wanted to do that. And about 3 or 4 years ago, I went out to hunt little blacktail deer and didn't get one. We were actually coming in the last day, and it was it's funny. Rob told me, he said, "Well, if you really want to come out here, so you need to do a test first." He said, "Here's how you know if you're going to like hunting in Alaska." He said, "Get your shower as cold as you can get it, turn it on, and go stand under it for about 5 minutes and take like three $100 bills, or no, 30 $100 bills, and just start throwing them away. And if you can throw away $100 bills in ice cold water, so you'll love hunting in Alaska, And he said,
And then convince your wife that this is a good idea.
"That's right, yeah." And so he said, "I can promise you three things." He said, "You'll be cold, wet, and miserable," and he was right.
Yeah,
I
I mean,
mean,
that
he
sounds
was
great.
right. But so we went out there, and the last day we're actually coming in, man. We'd been out in the field, and had to catch a flight, a little puddle jumper, to get to a an airport. And so we didn't have much, we didn't have a lot of wiggle room on time. But on the way back, to the camp, we saw a little bitty spike on the side of a mountain and stopped. And it's a comical story because, I had all my rain gear on. I didn't have any bullets chambered. And so I tried to step out of the truck and I'd taken the bottom part of my rain gear and just dropped it around my ankles, And so, what happened? I mean, I opened the door and boom, I can't take a step. And
Yeah.
so then I got to get my rifle and the little buck's just looking at us like, hey, what in the world is wrong with you guys? So anyway, he ran off. I missed him when I shot at him, but I didn't get anything with that. So Rob felt kind of bad for me. So he said, we'll get you back out here. So the next year, that was, I think 2023, I told him, I said, I'd like to go bear hunting. I'd like to go bear hunting. He kept telling me, so well, you can't go bear hunting in Alaska unless you have a guide. You got to be a resident, you got to be a first degree relative, or you got to have a guide. But I had another friend who was planting a church up there, and he said, "No, man, I can take you bear hunting anytime." And he's sending me pictures of black bears. He said, "Whenever you want to come." So we can go black bear hunting. So I got them both in a room. I was doing a conference up there, and I said, "Okay, Rob, Nathaniel, both of you guys, I've asked about bear hunting. Nathaniel, you tell me I can come anytime. Rob, you tell me I can't, because I'm not a resident and I don't have a guide." I said, "Explain to me the difference." And Rob said, he's an intern that's been there 20 years. He said, "Oh, that's easy." He said, "Nathaniel thinks black bears are bears." He said, "They're just big rodents."
Okay.
So Rob had never even hunted a black bear. He only hunts brown bears. And he's killed some massive grizzlies.
Okay.
So he put together this black bear hunt. First time he'd ever been black bear hunting. And he had some friends and connections around the Prince of Wales Island. There's another island, Wrangell Island. So we went to Wrangell, and through connections there, we were able to stay in this man's home on the island. And it's coastal bear hunting, spring bear hunting. So we would get in his boat and just spend the day glassing coastlines, Prince of Wales some, but smaller islands around there. And it was awesome. So Rob had a brown bear tag and he got a black bear tag too. He never hunted a black bear.
Mm-hmm.
And we were told that probably wouldn't see any brown bears, but you might, you should see plenty of black bears. We'd been out 2 or 3 days and had seen one black bear in passing, but we couldn't get a stalk on it. So the third, fourth day, I think it was, we saw a brown bear, small one, about 6 foot, and Rob got it. Yeah, I got to stalk it with him. So that was kind of fun. And he took that one. And 2 days later, we saw this pretty tire. So it's funny, the black bear and brown bear are about the same size, about 6'1".
Mm-hmm.
But it's good size for a black bear, not very big for a brown bear. And so we got out of the boat, and there's shells everywhere and making tons of noise. This bear's probably 300-400 yards away.
Okay.
And we put a pretty good stalk on him and got him. I think it was a 219 yard shot, if I remember right. And, I thought I hit him. And then Rob shot because he started running. Rob thought he hit him. And we both took second shots. He took a third. I knew my second shot missed him, but he goes up a hill in this woods. And so anyway, we went, looking for him, waited a little bit, then began to go and we looked for blood and we couldn't find any blood. And so after about an hour, and these two guys in the boat, they're still, back on the boat several hundred yards away. And so we're circling, we're doing every trick we know to look for blood, don't see it. So just finally convinced ourselves we missed him.
Okay.
And so one of the guys off the boat gets off the boat, comes on shore. He doesn't say a word to us. And he just starts walking up the hill. And so, Rob and I look at each other and said, okay, it's the brother of the guy that's driving the boat, that's Rob's friend. And after about 30 minutes, we're just standing there. I'm pretty perturbed at myself for missing the shot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and
right.
So Rob starts calling him. He said, hey, Jack, we need to, come on, man, we need to go. And doesn't hear anything. So he whistles at him. So after maybe 30 minutes, 40 minutes, we hear this, "I found him." And said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, I found him."
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so we go scrambling up this hill. Rob got there long before I did and went ahead. He wasn't dead. He put him down. We had hit him. And from the boat, what we didn't know is they heard the shots hit.
Oh,
they heard two
okay,
shots
gotcha.
Hit the bear, yeah. So anyway, so yeah, that's we. But then we had to get him down.
Yeah,
But
that's
that
the
was a
tough part.
fiasco, man. And but anyway, we got him, and so that's I made a rug out of him. And the meat, it's it June, but right before June 1st, anything before June 1st for spring bear in Alaska, black bear, you have to harvest the meat. So we harvested the meat, but it was shot through with worms. I mean, you
Oh,
could
was it?
see the
Ooh,
worms. It was
really?
horrible. So
Bummer.
they use it for crab traps, and that's what these guys did. They have a big
Okay.
crabbing, shrimping business, and so they just, harvested the meat and used it for crabs. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So did you pack the meat out? Did you have to quarter it and
Yeah.
pack it up?
Oh yeah. We did. Yeah, we didn't quarter it. We just gutted him out and then took it and skinned it because I wanted the skin.
Yeah.
And so Rob, I mean, he's like an artist, I mean, he skinned it and made sure everything was just right, and the meat then was divided up after that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. So let's switch gears a little bit. I got a theological question for you, and then I'll ask you a question about Field. So have you seen Field and Stream is back in print? Have you happened to see that? Remember Field and Stream
No,
magazine?
I haven't seen that.
Back in print. It's really cool. Just shout out to Field and Stream. They're doing a great job. You ought to check it out. It's a pretty cool
I
of
will.
all the publications that are out there now. I was a subscriber for years, and then they went away. And it was right after I had purchased tickets to this Outdoor Life slash Field and Stream event where they promised with the purchase of a ticket, you get a 1 year subscription to the magazine, and then they left publication, print publication. I was like, man, come on now. They're back.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool though. So Jesus, I'm preaching, finishing up Luke this Sunday, actually. Been preaching Luke for 2 years and 1 week. And we're finishing it up in Luke 24. And Jesus is eating fish. Jesus with his resurrected body. Is that an indication of the eternal state and the possibility of resurrected bodies and our abilities to, or, is this Jesus green lighting that we'll at least minimally be eating fish? What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think why not? I mean, it's a pleasant thought, so I wouldn't disagree with it. I mean, we're not going to be disembodied spirits. We'll be fully sanctified, glorified bodies and spirits. And so, yeah, why not? That would make a nice little element of heaven for me, to be
Yeah.
able to eat wonderful fish.
There we go. That's what I was
Yeah.
thinking. And somehow, I don't know, like, because it's interesting because you have things about Eden that are unique to Eden and will not be in the eternal state, like procreation won't be in the eternal state. So there's no multiplication that will be happening. But as Eden is expanded and the earth is renewed, restored, there's going to be, I was wondering if there's some unique things about the eternal state that aren't identical with Eden, but Eden gives us the best picture of the eternal state of our perspective now. If that's correct, then maybe there could be some way that maybe not hunting there for eternity, they're hunting here, but possibility of eating fish and meat, hopefully, not that we'll be disappointed at all, but boy, it'd be great to have a medium rare steak for eternity.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know how that'll pan out, but it's a pleasant thought.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So I guess last question. As far as your children have, I mean, they're probably a little bit older than when you're 55 and getting back into hunting or getting into hunting. Have you been able to bring your children into that at all? And has that lit a fire in them?
Not really. I've got six kids, five girls, one boy, and my son is he's a much better outdoorsman than I am, and he hasn't hunted. I think maybe he and I may have gone pig hunting once, but we have pigs around the house, and so I think we did that maybe once or twice. But my youngest daughter was still around, and so she's actually gone turkey hunting with me
Okay.
and pig hunting with me, and we didn't get anything. We took a couple of shots at turkeys. I think we just didn't hunt them right. We saw them, and anyway, we just made some tactical errors on that particular hunt. But no, we've talked about it with my sons-in-law. They've all expressed an interest, and I was able to take that my youngest daughter's husband, Ryan, turkey hunting and pig hunting just a few months ago. We went over to the other coast. I had an opportunity to preach, and there's a deacon in the church that has some property he manages, and so he took us out. And Ryan, we came upon a group of pigs, but nobody the night vision stuff that we had rigged didn't work. There's one comedy. It was a comedy of errors, and so it's just about dark, but maybe 100 yards, and so we shot. and we only got one little one. And so I told Ryan, that's your first, he's never been hunting. I said, okay, that's your first kill. You got your little pig, first shot. And then we went turkey hunting and had an opportunity, but we spooked them. We spooked a flock that flew away probably 300 yards off, and they were coming toward us. So yeah, but I hope to do more of that. All the guys are interested, and we just hadn't done it, but there's enough guys in the church, and I think there's some opportunities. So God willing, before I die, I'll
There
be
you
able
go.
to do better by them than I've done thus far.
That's cool. Yeah, turkey hunting stuff. I was able to get a I got a little Jake a few years ago. And oh, that's actually a pretty big Jake, actually. But it was we ended up eating it for Thanksgiving. We put it in the freezer and ate it. So it was
Oh, it's good. It's good, man. I've eaten some jakes, and I love turkey hunting. It's probably as much fun as anything that I've done, because it just requires so much tactical, patience and
That's
skill. So I've enjoyed
cool.
it.
Well, I think the aspect of, thinking through hunting over a lifetime, I mean, you've got, a lot of years, Lord willing, and I've got a lot of years, Lord willing, left. And what I love about it is there is an intergenerational connection that can be there of
Yeah,
being in the
amen.
woods. You don't know what's going to happen, whether your kids or grandkids are going to enjoy hunting or fishing and or not. But that is there to be the possibility of being out, at 80 years old, hunting with a great great grandchild and still enjoying spending time with the Lord. And that's a special thing. So if you haven't been to the woods, if you've not thought about getting out, it's not going to be for everybody, but there's something special about it. You might get some heat. I had a cousin that was telling me this is the definition of toxic masculinity when I killed the bear I killed. And but it's worth it. It's all worth it.
Amen.
So yes, indeed. Well, Dr. Askel, this has been a lot of fun. Unique perspective, I think. I don't know if have you ever talked to anybody out there? Is any podcast out there of you talking about this before?
I think I had one or two questions maybe at different times, but I haven't had a whole conversation about it. So,
Okay,
yeah.
so here's the first, folks. You're hearing it here. Full episode with Dr. Tom Askell talking about the hunting life. Thanks so much for listening. Appreciate it. And Dr. Askell, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks again for listening to the Shepherd's Crook podcast. For more information, you can go to theshepherdscrook.co. Please consider leaving a rating or review on iTunes. And if you want to become a member of the Shepherd's Crook, please message me and we'll get you on the list. We hope you have a great rest of your day.